Now, 7 o'clock, I'll be called to order the Fluvanna County Planning Commission regular meeting for June 13, 2017. First order of business will be the Pledge of Allegiance and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item is our director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One item to report. The Board of Supervisors did approve at their May 17th meeting, ZTA 1703, which, as you recall, was the amendments to definitions as it relates to junk and outside storage. It was approved 5-0, and there have been no further board actions to report on this month. I do want to let you all know that Mr. Lagermacina is absent tonight. He called me today, and he had recently had surgery, and was having some reactions to some medication, so he said he'll be back next month, but he regrets not being able to attend this month. He did ask his doctor, and he told him to stay home.
Thank you. The next order of business is the first of two public comment sections. Anyone wanting to comment on anything other than the public hearing, because at the public hearing, you'll be able to speak on the public hearing item. If you want to speak to about anything else, you may come to the microphone, state your name and address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll move on. The next item of business is the minutes from May 9th. It'll be both the minutes of the work session and our regular session. Do we have any comments on the minutes, or do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion that we accept the minutes as presented.
Okay. I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 3-0. Okay. We'll be going into our public hearing section now. Our first item of business tonight is SUP 1701, Education Transformation Center. Mr. Newman will be presenting.
Good evening, members of the commission. Before your request for a special use permit to establish an educational facility use with respect to a portion of 0.74 acres of tax parcel 18-10-1, is currently zoned B1, Business General. Adjacent properties are zoned A1, B1, and R3. And this use for an educational facility will itself be located in a former school building. Educational facility is a public or private institution for the teaching of children or adults, including primary and secondary schools, colleges, similar facilities. Location will be near Lake Monticello. This is the location of the CVS up here, and this is where the ABC preschool was located, and this is going to be the building that the special use permit will be for. It was formerly the ABC preschool. It's currently abandoned. It's currently zoned B1 Business General. And there's residential R3 over here, A1 agricultural here, and then our residential R4 over here. We have approximately 13 staff, no more than 30 students. This will be a 6-week program aimed towards at-risk youth. So I have an intensive curriculum as well as intensive supervision of students. Plat of the building, they're not proposing to make any changes to the add-on, to the exterior of the building, no additions, but there will be changes to the inside to make it compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act, repainting, reflooring, etc. It's the front of the structure, with ample parking, the right side of the building, and left side of the building. Conclusion, it's going to be an educational use to be located in a former school building, approximately 13 employees, no more than 30 students per semester, appears to meet the requirements of our zoning ordinance. There are 6 conditions and staff recommends approval of the special use permit. We have a suggested motion. The applicant and staff are available to answer any questions you or members of the public may have.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Mr. Newman?
So did this property not have a special use permit for the previous educational use?
I could not find one. I found a rezoning.
They did.
What's that?
I don't believe they had an existing.
They didn't, okay.
The ordinance may have changed since the ABC school was set up.
But they are operating it differently than the preschool, so we felt it'd be appropriate to have it specific to this use.
Agreed.
Any other questions for Mr. Newman? Would the applicant like to say anything at this time?
Good evening. I just want to thank you for this opportunity. This is a much needed school, not only for Fluvanna County, but for the surrounding counties as well. We have a large number of students that are being exported out of Fluvanna County for alternative education. And this will be an excellent opportunity to bring those funds back into the county.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the applicant?
I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that I'm glad to see that this building is going to be used again because it's been sitting there empty for so long. And although it was more of a preschool type thing, but it's still going to be a school, so I don't see any problem with that. And it's a good use, and it's probably something that's needed.
I would agree. I think it's a good use.
I'd be interested if has it been any negative comments from adjoining property owners or neighbors?
No, sir. I haven't received any comments, positive or negative.
Thank you. Okay, if there's no other discussion for the Planning Commission, do I have a motion?
We have to have a public hearing, Mr.
I'm sorry. Got ahead of myself tonight here. We're going to open the public hearing at this time. Anyone from the public wishing to come forward and speak on this matter, please come forward, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, I will move to the ask if anybody has a motion.
And I will. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 1701, a request for a special use permit to establish an educational facility use with respect to a portion of 0.74 acres of tax map 18, section 10, parcel 1, subject to the six conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Johnson, Mr. Zimmer, a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 3-0.
And the record should show that in addition to Mr. Lagrasino,
two absences.
Mr. Gaines is not here.
Okay. The next item is SUP 1702, Route 15, Fluvanna 11B, LLC. Mr. Robinson will be bringing that for us.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I'm going to give a brief presentation for special use permit, SUP 1702. This is a request, a special use permit request, to establish a contractor's storage yard as defined in the zoning ordinance on property identified as tax map 5, section 11, parcel 5B. This property is within the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area. The definition for a contractor storage yard reads in the zoning ordinance as storage yards operated by or on behalf of a contractor for storage of large equipment, vehicles, or other materials commonly used in the individual contractor's type of business. Storage of scrap materials used for repair and maintenance of contractors on equipment and buildings or structures for uses such as offices and repair facilities. So some various components of that definition will be occurring on the property with this special use permit request. The applicant is not proposing to construct any new buildings on the property. There are already three existing buildings on the property, which the applicant intends to use those for the proposed business, which is identified as a roofing contractor. So this is just a map to show the location of the parcel within the county. The parcel is basically at the very top of the screen. If you can see the green star right there at Zion's Crossroads. Right here in this area. And then this is an aerial image to show what's currently on the property. I'll note that this property line here in blue is, the GIS is incorrect in showing that property line to extend that far south. It's actually located more along this area along the fence. This building here is a residence that's on adjoining property. So the three buildings in question on the subject property are this building here at the front, then there's a building here in the center of the property, and then a garage or a storage shed here at the back. And then you can see the property's proximity to the intersection of 15 and 250. And this is a sketch plan that was submitted with the application. Again, not many changes to the property. The existing buildings are continued to be utilized. One change here, the rear of the property behind the garage or the shed will be used for a proposed construction yard or just a storage area for vehicles and materials. So this is a view of what you see as you currently enter the site from Route 15. Again, you can see the site's proximity to the intersection of 250 and 15. You can see the stoplight just ahead there. And this building here is the building that's at the front of the property. It's currently occupied by RE/MAX Realtors, and understanding that they will continue to be occupying this building, at the applicant's discretion. But as of now, they would remain in that building. And then when you pull on in further to the property, straight ahead is this building here, which was formerly occupied by I&J Home Builders office. This building is currently vacant, and this building would become the office for the proposed roofing contractor, which more specifically, I had not mentioned the name, is Lynchburg Roofing. Lynchburg Roofing is currently headquartered in Lynchburg, and this will be an additional location for them as they extend their service into the Charlottesville area. And then as you pull past that building and drive on around the back, this is the shed here. Formerly was been used for storage. I believe this will continue to be used for storage as well as maintenance of vehicles, equipment, etc. And then behind that building, just the existing view, I believe some of that will be cleaned up by the new owner of the property. So this is the rear property line. There's a fence along that property line. You can see there's some existing vegetation there. And just beyond that tree line is an adjoining residence on adjoining property. So to conclude, this request is to this is a special use permit request requesting to establish a contractor storage yard as defined in the zoning ordinance. As you saw in previous photographs, the property is already developed, already has buildings on it. The project appears to meet all county code requirements. Just some minor impacts from this request would be any adjoining residences, but again, they are already located there and have already seen the previous business's activities, so not expected to change too much from existing conditions. So that concludes my presentation, and I have a sample motion on the screen for the Planning Commission. I can attempt to answer any questions you might have, and I'll note that the applicant is present this evening for additional questions.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Robinson?
I did. I hate to be asking all the questions, but so two questions. One, I didn't see any mention of additional screening. Does that mean none is required, or it's all already there? Or is there any screening required for this use?
It's already there. The property is already zoned B1, and it already adjoins residential.
Okay.
The commission certainly has the, if you wanted to recommend additional screening or add additional conditions, you have the discretion to do so.
Wait to see anybody has any comments about it. And two, it seems like this is just codifying the use that's already there. Is that correct? Is this already being used for this?
Not quite. Staff's position is that when the property was originally rezoned in 2001, they were originally approved for an office building, which is what the the main building there on the property, that's what that was, that's what that use was approved for, as office activity. So this contractor's storage yard use is considered an industrial use. So we're converting the use of the property from office to industrial, light industrial.
Because I noticed in the application, they had said this area has been used as a contractor storage yard for the past 15 years. Mm-hmm.
We've had some discussions with the applicant about that.
Our interpretation is that it has not per the definition of the ordinance. Yes.
Okay, great. That's all I have.
Do you have any questions?
No, I don't have any. What is the expected amount of traffic volume they're going to have?
I believe it's going to be less. VDOT, just to look at their comment real quick. They just stated that the proposed use of the site by a roofing contractor for similar uses will not require any upgrades to the existing commercial entrance. VDOT does not object to the proposal. So I believe the traffic into the property is expected to be the same, if not less, because it'll mainly be the employees entering the site in the morning and late evening, and then you'll have the office staff working on the property during the day. I don't believe there will be much customer traffic to their property, but I'll let the applicant clarify that.
There are two entrances to that place. Which entrance
are they going to use? Sir, you'll get an opportunity to come forward when we open the public hearing.
Okay.
Thank you. Any more questions for Mr. Robinson?
I don't have any.
Okay, would the applicant like to come forward and speak about this at this time?
My name is Chris Good, and I'm the owner of Lynchburg Roofing. As he indicated, we are a roofing contractor, a residential roofing contractor. We mostly do residential re-roofing. Fully built out, we intend to hire around 25 to 30 new people in the area and train them. On a daily basis, we would have approximately 5 people in the office and another 20 people or so that would be coming there, meeting there in the morning, leaving their vehicle and taking just heavy-duty pickup trucks out to the job site. So the other thing is that we won't be storing a lot of construction material. All of our materials are delivered directly to the job site and dropped off with boom trucks, and then we go out and change people's roofs. So we you know, if you all approve this, we look forward to being a contributor to this county and having some good jobs and providing some training.
How many people do you employ in Lynchburg right now?
In Lynchburg, we have 32, and we have a run-up location that currently employs 24. So this is our third location.
What made you select that area in particular?
Well, I'm from Lynchburg, so we started there, and then Roanoke, we started getting requests for work in Roanoke, and originally we serviced Roanoke out of our Lynchburg office, and it got enough over there, we decided to establish a branch, and so we have 24 full-time employees over there, and then, business is going well, so we decided to look to expand again and chose this area.
Right.
Okay, I'll ask you a question because it seemed like somebody may be wanting to ask this question, but in the VDOT, and I'd read this earlier, but I wanted to pull it back up, it said this site has an existing VDOT-approved commercial entrance on Route 15 and was previously used by a contractor, I&J Home Builders, as an office storage shed and a lay-down area behind the building. The proposed use of the site by a roofing contractor of similar uses on the site will not require any upgrades to the existing commercial entrance. VDOT does not object to this proposal. Is there an additional entrance?
I think there's a small one. So if you're, approaching the site, headed toward Three Notch Road, we would use the first entrance on the right. That's the main. There's a small one on that.
So you're basically going to be using the VDOT approved entrance and so forth.
We don't have the trucks we use are just four door big pickup trucks, with trailers, but still, that's still an entrance we would use for swinging in and out.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the applicant?
There's one in the back. That's not the applicant. I'm going to open the public hearing.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to be opening the public hearing for this item at this time. Anyone wanting to make a comment about this, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be allowed 3 minutes.
Roger Henry. I live at 3807 Bear Tree Lane in Bumpus, Virginia, but I represent Mrs. Johnson, who lives directly behind this place here. Just a couple of things. I don't want to stop this. Don't get me wrong. I just want to find out, have a few questions answered. The fencing around here is deteriorating pretty badly. And I'd like to know what's going to go on with that. It's some portions of it are ready to fall down. So I'd like to find out about that. And I asked a question about the entrance. There's a trucking company using that piece of land now. I don't know how they're doing it, but they are. And they've been using the entrance on Bent Cedar Drive, and they're tearing it up. It's being rutted out, and then they've bent the road sign over, and they're not taking care of that. And they've dumped trees, logs in the back there. I don't know why, but they're not taken care of.
Okay.
And the operating hours, Mrs. Johnson just had three aneurysms, and she's 76 years old. And right now, sometimes at 12 o'clock at night, they're out there beating up dump trucks and making a lot of noise. So I'd like to find out about that. But that's basically it. I don't want to stop anything. I know where you're at.
The office hours are 8:30 to 5 o'clock. The crew arrives at 6:20 a.m., sometimes work as late as 7. Sometimes they're back by 4 p.m. Sometimes it's like 4 o'clock, but they could be 7 o'clock if they get tied up. But it's not late, not nighttime stuff.
Okay. All right. Then the main things are about the fencing and the entrance concerned.
Okay. And I might address that question. I had actually talked to Mr. Stewart about the fencing earlier today, and it's something that we will address in the site plan.
And one of the conditions of the conditional use permit is they have to comply, you know, with various standards. And it has to be in zoning compliance before any permits are issued or they're in danger of getting the special use permit revoked.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward and speak about this?
I'm the present owner. Buying the property from me, and just to answer the gentleman's reply, and I thank you for your comments. As far as the entrance is concerned, we had an agreement with the people on that road. It was a handshake. This is going back 15 years ago, that we would be able to use it as long as we have maintained it, and we had done that IMJ until they closed. Concerning the trucks at the back, I had no knowledge of it as the owner. I had rented that out to somebody storing his boat in the shed, and then he sublated to these people. And I'm so glad that Chris is coming to purchase the property and that you'll have some order there.
So these other tenants will be gone?
They're subcontractors. I don't even know them. They're only on months to months, and Chris, as soon as he takes it, he'll evict them and he'll take over.
So maybe that answers another question we had. Okay. I think all the questions that I had about this was answered. Like I said, I talked to Mr. Stewart earlier today about the fencing, and he said that this was something we would discuss at the site plan part of it, because I saw that the fence was getting a little age on it. Do we need any more discussion?
I do not.
Okay. But you, Mr. Johnson. Okay. Anyone else wanting to come forward and speak about this, please come forward at this time. If not, we're going to end the public hearing on this. And do I have a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion on it.
Okay.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 1702, a request to establish a contractor storage yard with respect to 1.8 acres of tax map 5, section 11, parcel 5B, subject to the six conditions listed in the staff report.
I have a motion by Mr. Johnson to approve this. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 3-0. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is ZTA 1701 sign ordinance.
Good evening. John made some changes to our sign ordinance. The first one was to add a new category for special advertising. This includes cases such as a grand opening, new management, or similar events or activities occurring on the premises. They'll be treated as temporary signs, and they should be no larger than the largest permitted signs within that zoning district. And this is just to accommodate some business requests that we've had to have grand opening signs. We've also clarified our entrance signs, including the area square footage as well as the height. Clarify that we're allowed to have at least one entrance sign per entrance. Made changes to our A1 zoning. Maximum business sign area has gone from 24 square feet to 32 square feet. We've added the entrance signs, and we've also clarified language regarding the number of allowed signs for temporary subdivisions as well as wall signs. And we've discussed all of these changes in our previous work sessions. Again, same changes here for residential and mobile home, larger business signs, more maximum sign area, as well as larger sign height. The entrance signs have been added as well. Again, for industrial and our planned unit development, business signs allowed to be up to 32 square feet if they're freestanding, or 40 square feet in area if they're monument, with subsequent changes to height, 10 and 12 feet respectively. Added again our entrance signs and made the same changes to our temporary subdivision and wall signs regarding that public road frontage. Finally, and the big one is this, that this tan line right here is our Zion urban development area. It lies within the Zion community planning area, but it's much smaller. We've added a new overlay zone. Business signs allowed to be up to 36 square feet or 40 square feet in area, depending on the style. They're also allowed to be somewhat taller. And the reason for this is because, as you could see on our zoning map, majority of the parcels here are zoned either industrial one, industrial two, business, and then there's residential scattered around. And since this is becoming a business hub for our community, we thought the larger signs in this overlay district would be pertinent. Inclusion, larger sign sizes for most of our zoning categories. We've clarified that we're allowed to have one entrance sign per entrance. The new Zion UDA overlay allows for better signage for businesses, and this furthers the goals of our 2015 comprehensive plan. Therefore, I have a motion to answer any questions you may have.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. New?
I do. I think it's great that we're making some changes to the signage overall. I would question maybe, you know, sort of the larger signs at 4 by 10 feet or 40 square feet as being, are they really large enough for, say, the types of businesses that you might expect in an intersection along those lines? And was any effort made to compare what we would be doing as far as our signage ordinance with respect to how Louisa County manages their signage ordinance? And is it more or less the same?
I believe this is more or less the same compared to Louisa. We did some comparison a couple of months ago, and I believe we even brought it before the board at one point, just showing how we compare to, say, Goochland, Albemarle, Louisa County. Most of the sign sizes that we've increased to is what I've been told that the business community would like. Our economic community development director, Jason Smith, has been in contact. He says that the sign sizes that we're going up to here are something that the business community would like to see. I know it's been a concern of the Planning Commission that this not be something that we have to come back to, you know, year after year. Based on what Mr. Smith has told us and based on his discussion, these sign sizes are what the community is looking for.
We asked that question several times over the two or three times we talked about that. Yes. I know I did. And I was satisfied at the end that the folks had done their homework and compared it to the other counties, and this was acceptable sizes.
And you had also worked with the economic development director.
Yes.
He'd actually come talk to us.
He went out, he talked to
and
the
also
businesses.
And also, we've had at least one business person come and talk to us about it and so forth like that. And we have compared our signage for especially adjacent counties.
Yes.
And then sort of the restriction on roof signage, what was the logic behind that?
For the, Jason, can you go back to that, please? You're referring to the wall signage?
No, it's actually it's a restricted one. The restricted end is just roof signage.
Actually, we don't allow roof signing anymore.
Right, it's actually one of the non-allowed options there is roof signs.
Flashing signs. I think there was some concern at one time about people just painting on the roof or whatever to sign something like that. And most counties do not allow roof signs, correct?
I don't believe they do, but that section hasn't changed in what we're proposing to do.
I realize it hasn't changed. I'm just, again, questioning whether... Again, on a major intersection along those lines, should we not be considering roof signs and potentially inflatable signs as well, too? They're just outright restricted, and I know in some of those major intersections, you might have business owners that would want to have that as an option. So I just didn't know if there was any sort of comparison or effort made to see
not
what
to roof signs.
That.
No. I can get back with you on that, but off the top of my head.
That's not really been a comment we've had from the people Mr. Smith has spoken with in regards to roof signs. It was more about increasing.
He's gone out in
the
community and talked to the people, too. We're basically trying to come up with something that can be lasting.
No, I know. I do understand that, and that's why I'm asking those questions. I mean, we don't want to deny a potential solid business, you know, whether it's a hotel chain or... restaurant chain or whatever the case may be that is looking to expand into that area, and they're limited by the type of signage that we put in. So,
if you'd like, I can add a slide about roof signs and inflatable signs compared with the other counties.
Yeah, I think that
before the board
good.
Meeting next week.
Sure. That'd be great.
Okay.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions for Mr. Newman? If not, I will be opening the public hearing at this time. Anyone wishing to come forward and speak about the sign ordinance and the changes we're making to the sign ordinance, please come forward to the microphone and state your name and address, please. Seeing no one coming forward, I will ask if we have any discussion that we need to have among ourselves. And I know we've worked on this for quite a while, and we've compared many different counties. I think I got paperwork about that thick at home from stuff that we've done. So I think we're pretty good to go as far as...
And should we show off Ms. Eager's prop sheet for comparison?
Ms. Eager was kind enough to mark on this bed sheet various sign sizes.
You were afraid to put the tape on the wall? Fred scared you off? I wasn't afraid.
The judge might have got you. So in other words, that's basically a 5x4, and then that's like a 6x4 when you go up to the 24, and that's a 4x8 when you come up to the 32 square feet. So
yeah,
that's
basically that was my point all along. You're talking about a sheet of plywood, which is hardly, but you know, we
32
have,
square feet, that is.
We have talked about this with Jason and with the business owners to death, and I think everybody's really happy with these changes.
What about when you have a business, say a business park that might have 8 or 9 businesses within that business park?
We talked about that.
We talked about that too.
Multiple entrances.
You may have more than one entrance.
Yeah, right. That this met those needs.
I mean, at 40 square feet, if you have 8 businesses in there, you're kind of limiting each person to 5 square feet.
Well, if you have more than one entrance, if you have 2 entrances, you end up really having 80 square feet, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. You got businesses at this end of the property, and you got businesses at this end of the property.
Sure.
And so what you may do is put larger siding up here, and then put ribbons for the other side, and do the opposite on the other end.
There was a lot more concern expressed from the community about things like grand opening signs and temporary signs than there were the sizes, but we took this opportunity to suggest.
Yeah, and I think the sign ordinance for the majority of the county is great. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's just when you look at the density that we might see in the future in Zion's Crossroads, is it still too restrictive? That would be my only real concern.
Well, it does. It seems like it matches up with the other counties around and so forth like that. And that's basically what we tried to do. And we talked to the business community. We had our economic development person talk to the business community. So that's where we at. That's where we came. We changed things ourselves. We talked to them. We had them go back and do stuff like that. So we're at a point now.
Based on the investigations that James did, we are at or larger than Louisa County. And Louisa County doesn't seem to be having any trouble attracting business half a mile down the road. So I don't think that's an issue with these standards.
Right.
Okay.
Let me say one thing about this, and that is that Mr. O'Brien, I've heard me say this, I know the commission has. I don't care what you do with signs. Somebody's going to think you need to change it. And so what you're doing now is forward thinking, and it really has involved a lot of research by the commission and the staff. But at some point in the future, whether it's soon or late, somebody's going to come up and say it's either too restrictive, not restrictive enough, whatever it might be. So.
And somebody might have a thing about one aspect or something like that. But I think overall, they've done a real good job.
Signs are a peculiar thing. They're just so, there's something about them that's so idiosyncratic that people will tend to be perfectly happy with the uses permitted and side yard requirements and all that kind of stuff. And they'll have some vehement either approval or objection of some aspect of sign laws. And it doesn't matter what you do. Everywhere I've been involved with this, it's been the same way.
Okay, if we're finished the discussion, I want to ask if I have a motion.
One more question.
Okay.
For multi-signs, and I'm asking this in part because I'm going through it myself, but if you have multiple signs in the same signage, are there any limitations and restrictions in terms of the amount of logos, the amount of colors that can be used within the signs? Did the Planning Commission look at that and give that any consideration?
No.
I don't think we did, no.
That's never come up.
Yeah. The sign ordinances for Albemarle County in particular when it comes to their what they call their main quarter entrances are quite restrictive, but they look for a cohesiveness. And that I'm not saying we have to consider that now, but that may be something that we look for down the road as well, too, is that, you know, when you have a lot of different signs on the same 40 square feet, what does that look like, and what are the limitations from that standpoint?
Well, that's something I think we may have to make some minor adjustments,
sure.
But I think that we're on the path to what the businesses in our county wants and what they have come to us about, what our economic director has talked to them about stuff like that.
It'd be a great problem to have too many different logos on a sign. That'd be a great problem for us to have. Yes, it would be.
It's improving.
If we had that many businesses, we might have
we
to make a change.
No, we will have that.
Yeah.
We will.
I think what Zimmer's saying is that would be a great problem to have.
It will be a good problem.
Like that. Do I have a motion?
Yeah, I will. I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of ZTA 1701, an amendment and accompanying resolution to the Fluvanna County zoning ordinance entitled An Ordinance to Amend Chapter 22, Article 15 of the Fluvanna County Code by addition of Section 22-15-2, parentheses 2, parentheses H, concerning a category of exempt sign designated as temporary sale announcement or merchandising, by certain amendments to sections and subsections 22-15-3, parentheses 1, 2, and 3, and the addition of subsection 22-15-3, parentheses 4, concerning the size and types of signs permitted by zoning district, and to amend Chapter 22, Article 22, Fluvanna County Code by the addition of a definition to subsection 22-22-1 to conform to the county zoning ordinance to the 2015 comprehensive plan.
That's pretty good.
You owe
okay. I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer, a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 3-0 and 2 absent. And all of our items tonight is 2 absent.
I would have been quite upset if that died for want of a motion.
The next item on the agenda tonight is ZTA 1702 PUD ordinance. Mr. Newman.
Yes, our current ordinance language currently states that planning and developments should be located in designated growth areas of the county as set forth in the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan within Chapter 5, Goal A2, says restrict approval of planning and development zoning to Zion Crossroads to allow for increased flexibility for commercial, industrial, residential uses while protecting the county's rural areas. So what this zoning text amendment does is that it removes references to allowing planning and developments in any community planning area that is not Zion Crossroads. So for example, we've permitted some language to say planning and developments must be located within the Zion Crossroads community planning area as set forth in the comprehensive plan. And also made it so that all uses and structures must be served by publicly provided central water and sewer systems. Mr. Tarzan, CPA. Have a motion.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Newman? I know that we've also discussed this item, and we also discussed it in length when we were doing the comprehensive plan, which was approved by the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, with this text about PUDs only to be in the Zions Crossroads area. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Newman?
Mr. Chairman, can I just make an observation? This is purely clerical, but I don't want anybody to be misled the way I was when I read this in section 22.14.8. On page 353 of the appendix, attachment A, there's a table that has the density regulations and heights and all that kind of stuff for all the different development areas. And the table looks like it doesn't strike through the number 4 in the ones below Zion Crossroads. That's just because the strikeout corresponds with the crossbar on the 4.
Yeah,
I can
see that.
I just don't want anybody to misread the table. It is correct the way it is. It just looks like it's not done.
Did we get any feedback from the Rivanna district in terms of limitation to a PUD there? I mean, I'm certainly familiar that some of the other districts.
No comments from
no
anyone.
No comments at all. Okay.
And this would be, just for my clarification, this would be limiting it to the entire CPA,
yes.
Unlike the last resolution,
correct,
which was related to the UDA.
Yes.
And,
I don't recall any comments during the comprehensive plan process from...
Not about this issue. I don't either.
Mr. Chairman, one more staff comment that I just thought of. Can you back up, Jason, to the slide before? The one that had the water and sewerage requirement. Yeah, so in the last one, Fred, I just want to make sure that amended language in the second paragraph doesn't in any way seem to imply or make people think that you would be required to use that central water and sewage systems. I just want to make sure nobody has some misconception on what the language is.
I don't understand your question.
The new language,
you've got to use public water,
says that served by both publicly provided central water and sewer systems.
Right.
But that doesn't mean John Homemaker in a PUD in Zion Crossroads has to use that central water and sewage system.
He doesn't have to abandon his existing well. It does mean that. But if you were put in a housing development, you would have to use public water.
Indeed, yeah, for new developments. And we'll clarify that on some of our master water and sewer language, but I just want to make sure nobody misinterprets that, because it doesn't require anyone to connect to the systems independent in this language.
It doesn't. That's
because it's better.
Doesn't assume, that would existing.
Be an, it would be lawfully non-conforming.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
The density for PUD is again how I think.
But there's no PUDs in that area now, so any new PUD would be required to do that. Correct.
Correct.
Could be existing homes within a PUD, possibly, I guess, in theory anyway.
I think that we've...
So the density's right here in the report.
What is it?
Your density right here.
That's that.
So that was the table I was just talking about.
Oh.
Yeah.
In our discussion, too, you know, we've seen in the past where people have thought that they had enough water for this type of thing, and it didn't come to fruition. I almost said fruition, and so forth like that. And I think the fact that when you're building something with this thing like this, I just think that the publicly provided central water and sewage system is the way to go, because of we were once told that
big discussion during the comprehensive plan process.
Right, exactly.
And a big concern of the surrounding folks was it's going to suck the aquifer dry or impact their area wells. So this removes that consideration from.
Yeah, but I've always taken sort of the free market approach to that, which is if it's available, then and you can build it and it meets the requirements from the DEQ, then you should allow people to do that. If it's not available, then you can't do it, and that sort of solves that its own problem from that standpoint.
When we get done with what we're doing with the waterline from DOC, it probably is not going to be available, because we're probably going to have some restrictions on development of competing systems.
Okay. That's still limited to one particular area.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
Outside of that area, then.
It wouldn't apply to other areas.
Right. But I'm just saying outside of that area, you have that limitation. So, you know, that to me, I always felt that if there was sufficient capacity, that's a developer's responsibility and the DQ's responsibility to prove, not the county's responsibility to limit from that standpoint, because they have the capacity. And I would argue that when it comes to...
I may be misunderstanding.
Well, in other words, so we go back to the property that was in question in Palmyra,
right.
The golf course property. Right. You know, the argument was made there wasn't going to be enough capacity there, and my point was if there's any capacity, then they can't build to, you know, there are three stages from that standpoint, and as that turned out to be the case, they changed their model from that standpoint. But, you know, that's driven by the developer's ability to produce the water, not by the county's ability to produce water.
I don't disagree with that, mm-hmm. but in this case, I think what you're going to see, and you haven't seen all the things, but you've heard some of the things from Mr. Stevens, there's going to be a need to protect the county's water system so that it cuts out competition so the county can supply an optimum system of public water. And I think this is consistent with that.
Sure, and I certainly understand that with water when it comes to limitations on sewage. I think that I'd be more concerned about the language on the sewage component being required to be public sewage, because we have a limited amount of sewage capacity at present, and that could hamper our growth. And I do think that with the advancements that there have been made with drip fields and with the amount of land that's available, we shouldn't be limiting it to public sewer. I would have no argument against public water, but I think public sewer is a limitation.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, as an additional comment, trying to clarify this before we get to next week's board public hearing, when it says all structures shall be served by both publicly provided central water and sewage systems. I share Mr. O'Brien's point. There are some businesses in the Zion Crossroads area that we are not going to want to serve with sewer because of limited capacity. So I'm wondering if, and this is legal language Fred will have to help us on, I'm wondering if we can say that in a PUD district, all uses and structures shall have, publicly provide central water sewage systems available, or something to that effect.
I think you may be missing two points. One is we're not changing the fact that there has to be a central system. So in a PUD, everything has to be served by a central system. I'm not counting non-conforming uses. And all we're doing here is eliminating the privately provided central system. So you can't say my PUD is going to be, operated by, Fred's Sewer Company. Yeah, it would have to be a public system.
Right, but we don't.
But it's just the PUD. Properties outside the PUD.
The PUD lay on top of an existing subdivision or an existing, business park or something? I'm not sure. That's what I'm asking.
It might, but a PUD is a zoning category.
I understand that.
And so what happens is the developer comes in and says, I have my, I think it's a minimum of 100 acres. Mm-hmm. I have a minimum of 100 acres, and it's, for purposes of the development, it's undeveloped.
Okay.
They may have houses and stuff, but they're not going to remain. So it's undeveloped, and I'm going to develop everything under a unified patent, including the uses, the distribution of the uses, the internal transportation, the water, the sewer, all this other stuff in this PUD. Now, if you're outside the PUD, but in the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area, this regulation doesn't apply.
Well, I do understand that, but where you're most likely to have the greatest increase, water is not going to be the limiting factor for us there. Sewage is going to be a limiting factor in Zion Crossroads right now, as it stands presently, right? And if a creative alternative to a public served sewage system is both viable and environmentally friendly for that area, shouldn't we be allowing them to pursue that? This language doesn't appear to allow that.
It doesn't.
Right.
And I would suggest that I think the circumstances you were talking about are pretty specialized circumstances.
But we have the problem here. I mean, in Palmyra, right?
No, we didn't have the problem here. And the reason we didn't have the problem here is, number one, that's not a PUD.
But the other thing is capacity. I'm just talking about capacity.
I know.
The PUD component. I'm just talking about capacity.
I know, but it wasn't capacity in this case. Now, what happened was the developer came in and said, I want to put in a certain mix of uses. And I want a special use permit for a private central system, and tried to put in the private central system, and he couldn't get it. And in his case, he couldn't get it. The limiting factor was water.
Water, right.
But it really wouldn't make any difference.
No, I think it makes a huge difference, though, because we only have 75,000 gallons of sewage available to us.
100,000.
Well, roughly 175, which is not very much. And then we are hamstrung again in terms of, you know, we may have all the water in the world, but we don't have the sewage.
Well, the problem
and, is, and the way this is written, there is no alternative.
Well, the problem, right? Well, that might be the case.
It is the case, the way it's written.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is we haven't had a planned unit development of that anything approaching that magnitude.
Yeah, but 75,000 is not very much. We all know, or 100,000 is not that much.
I would disagree with you. In terms of the history of Fluvanna County, it's very large. The only sewage systems we have in central sewage systems we have in Fluvanna County that I know of are the one down here, which is
lake.
40 or 50,000.
It's operating at about 20,000 gallons
but
per day right now.
40,
but Cassidy's 39.
Right.
And the lake. Mm-hmm. So the lake is a private system. Mm-hmm. We know the trouble it was to put the lake system in. It was put in. I remember the day when it was offered to the county for $1, and the county turned it down because it wasn't worth that. I was in the meeting. I know what they said. And
I think I would say it was worth a lot more, but
We did it. The county seriously considered it, and the problem was there were so many problems with it. It's been very much redone by the current owners, but the owner at the time was the Lake Monticello Service Company. And the county did an analysis of it and determined that it was the reason they wanted to give it to the county for nothing is that it wasn't worth anything. Mm-hmm. Now, it was worth something to the people who were served by it, but it wasn't worth it to anybody else. The point I'm making is that when you have, it isn't a PUD under the terms of this ordinance, but Lake Monticello is essentially a PUD. Mm-hmm. It's in the nature of a PUD. It took, I can't tell you how long, probably on the order of 3.5 decades to get the water and sewer system straightened out at the lake, starting in 1969. And that's a one-off deal. If we have another PUD of that size, then we're going to have to contemplate some of these other problems.
Well, it doesn't even have to be. You might have multiple PUDs. I'm not arguing against the water component, but the sewer component seems to me to be.
You can't get multiple PUDs that easily because it's a minimum area requirement of 100 acres. And there simply aren't that many parcels that large in Fluvanna County, certainly not in that area.
To date, right? They just have been aggregated, but you could end up with parcels.
You could. Yeah. It's possible. But I think 100-acre development in Fluvanna County is a large development. Mm-hmm. Even if it's at a
moment. I would disagree with that, yeah.
So my point is I'm not necessarily saying the problem couldn't arise.
Right.
But I think the practicalities of getting the system up and running are more, let's say, more time-sensitive than is the ultimate possibility of a very large system being needed.
So let me ask the question from this direction.
I don't know why I'm answering this question.
In the process of, does the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors have to approve a PUD?
Yes.
Okay. So in the process of approving a PUD in the Zion Crossroads CPA, if we don't have adequate sewage system or, let's say, water system at that time to serve that PUD, can we decline the PUD on that basis?
Yeah.
Legally?
Yes.
Okay, then that's fine.
You could you could do that. Or another thing you could do is you could phase the development of it so that.
Well, but I want to have a way to say no to a PUD if we can't meet that language.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to you is that if, let's say you had a 200 acre parcel, right, aggregated parcel, and you only had enough water sewer to serve the uses that were planned on half of it. Mm-hmm. The developer comes in and says, I want to do this in two phases. Mm-hmm. Phase one is over here. I want to do that now. Phase two is going to be, I want it approved, but pending availability of utilities. Mm-hmm. You could certainly do that.
So let's extend that a little bit further and say, okay, so we have a 100-acre parcel. We have a density of 16 houses, 16 people per acre. maybe I want to go ahead and put, you know, 5 apartment complexes in down there, and I'm going to use 20 acres of my 100 acres, and I want to use the other 40 acres for a drip field and parks or whatever the case may be.
Well, that's exactly what this is designed to prevent.
I understand that's designed to prevent that, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily a good thing, right?
Ask him.
I'm just pointing out, you've now taken an area where you're, you know, potentially going to create some density, and you've restricted it, and or if you haven't restricted it, a development of that size is going to use all of our sewage capacity, which we don't want them to be used for that component.
I do want to note that the R3 is still available with major utilities.
Significantly less density, though, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So you're not going to get that kind of developer to come in there and do that kind of thing.
But if they take 40 acres to put in a drip sewage, then you've reduced your overall density also. You've taken 40 acres out
of commercial
developments.
I'm not.
That's not really a good thing. That's really not necessarily a good thing. I think
it's PUD, it's 30% to 15%. You know, you're going to get some mixed use from that standpoint. I mean, you could, you know, let's say it's a large mall that wants to come in there and do something along those lines. You know, there's a lot of different ways that can be done. It doesn't all have to be just 5 apartment buildings. Let's say it's affordable housing in the area. Let's say it's all those other things. Do we want to limit ourselves when, at present, the county doesn't have the resources or funds, and nor does it have an agreement with any other sewage provider in that area?
Well, let me ask you a question here.
Right.
In the past, we've had people come with applications.
Mm-hmm.
They say we're going to take a certain amount of water out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell us that 100% of that water and stuff is going to go back in the ground, which is impossible to start with. You're going to have evaporation. So once you start taking that amount of water for that bigger thing out of that ground, how is it going to affect the water table in the surrounding areas?
Well,
if you start also with the sewage system like you're talking about, then in the past, what they've talked about, every so often they've got to come in with large trucks and pump it out and so forth like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by having it publicly, it's more control, and it's actually better for the developer because they don't have to be looking for the how they're going to control the water. And so what are they going to do? You allow PUD and allow them to get water out of the ground, and all of a sudden water that goes dry. Who's going to take care of that?
So the water that we're talking about specifically for Zion's Crossroad is going to be served by pipelines that can bring up to almost 2-3 million gallons worth of water, right?
So
water in Zion's Crossroads is not going
to
be the issue. I'm not arguing against the water. Where the limitation comes is on the sewer side, because for the county to go into building a sewer treatment plant could be another $20, $30, $40 million that it might spend, money that it probably doesn't want to spend at present. So you've made this large investment into bringing water into the area, but you've almost automatically restricted it by saying, well, there are no other alternatives other than public sewer.
Well,
that does not make a lot of sense.
Well, wait. But that's not true.
It is true.
It isn't true. And the reason it isn't true is that this provision only applies to PUD. It doesn't apply throughout the
business zoning, commercial zoning, the R3. There's lots
right.
and lots of
so,
zoning.
And the other problem, in addition to what Mr. Zimmer was saying about you taking 40 acres for a drip system, which is a very inefficient use of the property. The other problem with it is that if you allow all this development to the capacity of the water, and if you will, I don't want to use the word ignore because I know you're not, that's the best word I can think of. And I know you're not saying don't have public sewer. But then you have, let's just put round numbers on it. You have 100,000 gallons of development, worth of development in terms of the water.
Okay.
But you only use 10,000 gallons of the sewer. How do you develop the sewer system?
Well, normally, my understanding is, and I'm not an expert on it, is that basically the ratio between water and sewer for calculations from developers' purposes is almost on a one-to-one basis.
Even though
they don't use the same capacity, I understand
that. I agree with you.
But the ratio is done in the same manner. So in order to get the approval, they usually have to prove that they can meet that ratio from that standpoint. So, you know, we are, in essence, coming in and saying, you know, to, I mean, and you can, I can take the same argument that's being made and saying, well, it's not going to apply in many cases. So if it's not going to apply in many cases, then why would we restrict it to begin with? And second of all, if it's market-driven, and I have, you know, now created the density and the growth in my 40 acres, and now there is available sewer, okay, I'm going to remove my drift field system, and I'm going to connect to the sewage line at that point in time.
So only if you're required to.
Oh, well, maybe, maybe not, because now that land is worth a lot of money.
Historically, well.
That land is worth a lot of money, right? We're talking about a very limited area, and my concern is that we are limiting potential uses of that land.
You've heard my take on it. I think there are lots of reasons to require both public water and public sewer, economic as well as land use consideration.
If the county had public sewer, I would agree with you 100%. They don't.
No, I think it will encourage the county to get public sewer. And one thing would be an utter disaster is to have the development that you've hypothesized and have the drip system fail for whatever reason.
That model of thinking is, I mean, there are counties now that employ sewage systems.
They do it, but that's not the point. I realize that any system can fail. The difference is that if it's a county system and it fails, you have an entity that you know is going to be there, namely the county. Mm-hmm. What happens if your provider does what Lake Monticello Service Company did, and that is it didn't manage it with enough reserves to keep it going, and virtually went out of business? Now, you don't remember that, but I did.
I pay the price every month, so I do know what happens, right?
Right.
I mean, I pay $200 or $150 a month because neither Lake Monticello Association nor the county did their job. And I won't say the county. It's wrong for me to say the county. The opportunity that was presented to the county at that point in time could have set the seeds for it to begin its own public water and sewer system at that point.
That was an argument.
And probably better serve the public at that point.
That was an argument at the time. It's poor supervisor resolved.
Right, absolutely. I think that the my concern is, and maybe a limited concern, is that we are limiting ourselves unnecessarily by inserting the language on the sewer side. No complaints about the water side, but on the sewer side, we are artificially limiting ourselves. So, and we could end up in a situation where we turn down a nice piece of business because of that.
So a question for next week then, right, for Fred and for Mr. Stewart. If the Board of Supervisors next week changed that amended language by two words, is that legal after the advertisement, after the Planning Commission recommends approval and it comes to the board? Can they still change that language if they needed to?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll give you answers in the meantime, and research it back and then feedback to the Planning Commission too. But we don't necessarily need to hold you all up. I do have concerns about the language, and I want Wayne to look at it too. It may be I'm just not understanding it well enough now that I've read it again, and it may be just fine because PUDs are not going to be the
it may be the exception. We're eliminating a tool that could be useful to us.
Right, and I'd like to make two points. One, I truly believe you're dealing with a 5% issue and casting out the 95% when you make all these arguments. And two, I think this exactly does what the Planning Commission is tasked with considering: land use issues, the comprehensive plan, and these other things that, you know, that we batted this around at this, like the last issue, several meetings. Batted this around. Well, I think this addresses all the things that a planning commission is designed to do. Some of these issues here, maybe the Board of Supervisors wants to beat them to death. That's okay.
It has been discussed many times. The problem is, what do we do? The problem is not a problem because Mr. Payne said and Mr. Stewart agreed that we can not approve a PUD based on lack of availability of water and sewer. If that's the case, as long as we have that legal authority, then there isn't any problem with that language. It's just somewhat limiting. But if I can disapprove that person's request for a PUD because they don't have adequate water or sewer available, then the answer is there.
That is a part of the discussion we had. And this is the language that we came up with.
I know, but your discussion doesn't make it to the Board of Supervisors, Mr. Bibb, and that's why it's important that staff hears this and takes that to them, because there's going to be the same questions next week. I appreciate all the hard discussion you've done, but the board sometimes asks different questions too. So I'm satisfied as long as we can disapprove a PUD if we don't have publicly available water and sewer.
Of course, one solution to that, the developer's got his heart set on this particular 100-acre parcel, and he wants to put in more than the system will supply. He could profit the difference.
Exactly.
He's going to have to put in some kind of system. Why not put it in to county standards and have the county maintain it, just like the roads? Who wants to put in private roads in a development of that magnitude?
You're talking potentially changing the whole economics of that project.
But also, you've got to remember, how many times have the county right now working on roads that the developers promised in their development thing to develop up to standards that have not happened? And we had to, the homeowners and the county had to work together to get them up to the standard so VDOT could take them in. What happens if a big sewer system like this fails?
And that's been the discussion since the comprehensive plan and those applications we had a few years ago, is the desirability of having something of this intensity on public water and sewer by necessity to prevent.
And there have been lots of presentations and arguments as to how those systems can be managed. I mean, obviously, it's not in the best interest of somebody who's put in place a large community, whether it's a mix of residential or commercial, and to have that system fail. That creates a lot of problem for them. But I think that, you know, that's, again, the free market approach says, let them tell us the story. Let's not deny the story right off the bat, especially when the county has a limited resource and a limited appetite for expanding that resource to begin with. It's easy to argue, that creates an incentive for them to put in sewer. Well, there's been an incentive to put in water into Zion's Crossroads for many, many years, and it's taken decades to happen. So we can't count on the fact that the county will necessarily pony up at the right time, but we can count on the fact that if we don't have a flexibility in the sewage systems in that place, that we could restrict growth and unintentionally. And that's my concern with Zion's Crossroads. A lot of money is being put in to develop Zion's Crossroads, and the county taxpayers are paying for that. To limit them without having a specific plan, to me, seems a disservice.
Well, let me just say one more thing, because we're not getting anywhere. I have been on both sides of the development business, so I know the way developers think. And I can tell you that a developer, I won't say it never happens, but it's very rare that a developer ever wants to build something that he or his successors in interest is going to have to maintain. What he wants to do is build whatever he's got to build and give it over to somebody else, e.g. the county, to operate so that once he's done with it, it's finished, it's over. The biggest nightmare in any kind of development is having an essential facility, specifically sewer, but certainly could be water too, and have that system, I'm going to use the word fail, and that doesn't necessarily mean that there's no water at all or no sewer at all, but it's inadequate for whatever reason, to have that fail, and people start having their houses not be able to occupy. And there's only one entity that is going to end up being where the buck stops, and that's the county. And I've seen this happen too many times not to know that. So when you say it changes the economics of it, it does change the economics of it, but the economics have a positive and negative characteristic.
Sure. But I mean, are we going to automatically assume that because 5% of privately owned drip systems fails, that the county should automatically not participate in
that? That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the developer knows that it's going to cost X dollars for him to put in whatever the system is. Mm-hmm. He can get that calculated by his engineers. He's going to feed that into his cost-benefit analysis, mm-hmm. and his profit margin. And that means the price of the project. But he also knows that once he gets it done, he's done with it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to sit there and babysit it for the rest of eternity.
And if proffering to the system, the county system, doesn't make economic sense, then he's going to do somewhat less density, have a different type of development besides a PUD.
If
there's lots of options here. Nobody's being restricted
county,
by this.
If proffering to the county system doesn't work, I would predict, for purposes of this discussion, the developer can't make the private system work either, because it's the same system, except that the county doesn't have to worry about paying taxes and making a profit and borrowing money on the private market.
So, I mean,
I understand that,
but I'm saying, okay, let's say the developer proffers $2 million to a county sewer system. County sewer system is going to cost $15 million to develop, and it's 10 years away. It doesn't matter. It's not going to happen. You know, you're not going to get the $2 million.
Well, we're not going to resolve this here, but I'm going to tell you. I am satisfied that for major projects, and anything that's 100 acres or more in Blue Banner County is a major project, those economics are going to get worked out.
I'm not convinced of that at all, but it's okay.
Okay.
If we've finished the discussion here of the Planning Commission and other entities, I'm going to open the public hearing. Anyone from the public wishing to come forward and speak at this time, please come to the microphone, state your name and address.
My name is Patricia Eager. I'm at 1107 Meacham Creek Drive in Troy. I just have a question. You keep talking about 100 acres, but under 2214.6, it says the minimum area for designs of crossroad community planning area is 20. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. That's all. Just wanted clarification.
And there's a big gap between 16 and 6, which we really don't have anything else in our zoning for that.
Of course, we've got another choice, not allow any PUDs at all, nowhere in the county.
Well, of course you have that choice. I mean, but again, the county's stated purpose is to bring in the water system to create development.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that, you know, Palmyra didn't want to have that, and that they have their thinking for that. I totally get that.
See, my thinking is maybe just a little bit different than there was. The fact I would be worried more about a failure of a private sewer system than I would about a private water system.
But in Zion's Crossroads, we're not going to have a private water system. In Zion's Crossroads, it's going to be a public water system, period. So the limiting factor for us is that we only have 100,000 gallons of sewer before we have to build our own sewer plant. And so we want to be as creative and flexible as possible in allowing people to meet their sewer requirements without. And here's where, you know, I think ordinances in terms of what should a drip field look like, what are the requirements for that drip field, how is it to be maintained, all of those things are important ordinances for the county to have. But we shouldn't automatically just take the assumption that all drip fields are bad and they're not a tool that the county should use. There are literally counties that employ drip systems as part of their public sewer system. So, you know, a lot of technology has changed in relationship to drip systems, but there still seems to be an overlying mentality that all drip systems are bad and therefore shouldn't be used. And I think that we're limiting ourselves from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. What type of system do you have in Lake Monticello?
We have a sewer plant right there.
Okay. Do you have a lot of complaints about certain sections of the Lake Monticello that the sewer smell is very bad?
You do get complaints from that. It used to be a lot worse, but drip fields are not necessarily, if a drip field is properly maintained, that is not the case there, because they don't actually store septic like that in big open pools the way the lake does.
Well, I think you're imparting motive on this that's not there. This is not condemning drip systems. This is saying, for me, is saying a project of this density and this magnitude, whether it's 20 acres, but at this density, We feel like that's more appropriate for public system.
We don't have it.
So we can put in our own drip system and charge the folks who are part of it.
The developer can put in the drip system and dedicate it to the county.
Right.
That is okay.
I mean, see, there's options. And again, we're talking maybe 5% was generous. We're talking about a 2% problem.
Well, if it's 20 acres, I'd say it's a lot more than a 5%.
This only applies if they want PUD zoning.
Again,
they're only applies.
At 20 acres, you're going to have a lot more than 5%.
We've had one PUD request in the history of the county.
Okay, but we are changing the nature of Zion's Prosper.
But you're solving a problem that doesn't exist.
I guarantee you this will come up in the next 10 years.
Further clarification, there is no minimum acreage requirement in the UDA area of Zion's Crossroads.
For a PUD?
Correct.
Well, then I'd say it's might be a 75% chance that you're going to see this come up.
You may not, because you got your maximum density is 16 units an acre.
Right.
You got 20 acres. That's 320 units.
Right. And that would in the standard definition of, what is it, 30 gallons per unit or something like that?
50 per person per day.
How many?
50 per person per day.
That would totally eliminate our existing sewer system. Just that one.
Well, I can't do the math then.
Yeah, 300.
I don't think you're getting anywhere, Mr. Chair.
No, I'm not getting anywhere. Anyone else wanting to come forward to speak on this issue, please come forward. State your name and address. Okay. If no other people are coming forward, and we've seemed to have had lots of discussion, we have lots of different ideas and so forth like that. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay, Mr. Johnson.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of ZTA 1702, an amendment and accompanying resolution to the Fluvanna County Zoning Ordinance entitled An Ordinance to Amend Chapter 22, Article 14 of the Fluvanna County Code by certain amendments to sections and subsections 2214.1, 2214.6, 2214.7, 2214.8, 2214.12, 2214.13, thereof amending the Fluvanna County Zoning Ordinance to conform to the 2015 Comprehensive Plan Implementation Goals and Strategies.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 3-0 and 2 absent. Okay. The next item is ZTA 1704, Industrial General Ordinance. Mr. Newman.
Final item that we have for public hearing. Its purpose is the amendment is to provide flexibility in building design as to building height and yard requirements for purposes of promoting orderly development and economic development. And these are changes to our I-2 zoning category. When permitted uses adjoin I-1 or I-2 districts, there shall be no minimum side yard requirement except as otherwise required. And because it's been a big issue that we've had with most of our I-2 being around the women's prison, foregoing notwithstanding, there should be no minimum side yard requirement for any property adjacent to one owned by the Virginia Department of Corrections. And that gets sort of a big headache that we've had in Zion's Crossroads. That particular parcel is owned A1, and there's 50-foot setbacks. By adding this language, you make it much easier for industrial development to build more efficiently up there. We've also increased the building height from 45 feet up to 70 feet. We removed this section regarding public and semi-public buildings being allowed to go up to 60, because that 60 is now null and void. Buildings can at least be 70 feet. Anybody wishing to exceed that height of 70 feet may obtain a special use permit for that exemption. So it eliminates our restrictions on the properties adjacent to the women's prison, increases our building height, and remove that section that would be made null and void by that height increase. We have a motion.
The First Amendment actually does two things. It clarifies that there is no required setback from I-2 for anything except A-1 or the residential districts or commercial districts. So if you got industrial districts side by side, there already is no setback. There is a 50-foot setback from the industrial property, from the residential property for the industrial property. That's what he was talking about, the woman's prison. because we've had a couple of applications for industrial rezoning abutting the women's prison. Women's prison is zoned A1, but it's clearly an institutional use. It's not a residential use. So there's no need to have that 50-foot setback on adjacent properties. So this first language is to clarify those two circumstances. And the other one is to make clear that it doesn't matter what the zoning is of anything owned by DOC. There's no setback for adjacent property from that, regardless of its zone.
That's it.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Newman? We've discussed this a lot and so forth like that, but I will open this up to public hearing right at this moment. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on this issue, please come forward and speak your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the public hearing on this matter. And if there's no more questions or discussion, do we have a motion?
My turn.
Yeah.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of ZTA 1704, an amendment and accompanying resolution to the Fluvanna County Zoning Ordinance to amend Chapter 22, Article 12 of the Fluvanna County Code by certain amendments to sections and subsections 22-12-6, 22-12-7, thereof, amending the Fluvanna County Zoning Ordinance. The public purpose of these amendments is to provide flexibility in a building design as to building height and yard requirements for purposes of promoting orderly development and economic development.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 3-0 and 2 absences. Okay. That's the end of our public hearings. I got one thing to say, and I know we're going to have an unfinished business Columbia zoning update, but I want to make a suggestion at this time. I want to make a suggestion that people attend the meetings when we're discussing these items so that we can have feedback or concerns at that particular time, so that we don't have to spend our time at a public hearing on things that we could have discussed or changed prior to our meetings. Okay. We don't have any presentations, no site development plans, no subdivision plans, and the unfinished business we have is a Columbia zoning update. Brad Robinson, senior planner.
All right, good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. We don't have a presentation or anything on this tonight. We just wanted to give you an update and let you know that we're hoping next month to officially kick off the rezoning process. And mainly tonight, we wanted to make you aware that the County Administration Office is revitalizing the Columbia Tax Force. So there's a kickoff meeting scheduled for next Monday, June the 19th. The Columbia Renewal Tax Force, a meeting will be held Monday, June the 19th at 7 o'clock p.m. at St. Joseph Parish Fellowship Hall in Columbia. So we wanted to extend an invitation for the Planning Commission members to attend that meeting if you so desire. And the county administrator is here. I don't know if he had anything else he'd like to add.
How are we going to publicize that meeting?
It's been broadly publicized in the paper, on the website. I posted the flyers, some of the lobby, I posted the flyers in the Columbia Post Office, the Fort Union Post Office, the library, County Administration Building. I have a list in the office, two or three other buildings, and there was a large mail group that it was sent to, and then they promulgated from there. So, and it was, and it'll be on TV tomorrow night as well.
So what about the old Columbia Task Force?
All part of that mail group?
Because I was on there, and I didn't get the email.
Yeah, I didn't know you were on the old one, so.
Yeah. Okay.
How is the progress coming on the discussion about the demolishment of the certain properties?
You mean the FEMA grant?
Yeah.
It's proceeding. We've got contracts and we're proceeding to get the survey, and the survey, I think, is the limiting factor right now, and it's underway.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions involving the Columbia?
Like Mr. Robinson said, we should have a, as requested by the Planning Commission, we should have a firm proposal from the Planning Department in regards to the zoning discussion we've had the past several months in Columbia. We'll get that to you next month.
Yeah, we've been working on that for quite a while now. So. Okay. If there's any other, is there any new business? It doesn't seem like there's any listed. Now is time for our last of the two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward about any issue, please come forward to the microphone, state your name and address, and speak about any of your concerns about anything in the county. Seeing no one coming forward, if no one objects, we will be adjourning at 8:30. We're now adjourned.